Hello, everyone, and welcome to the English Cybersecurity Podcast. My name is Eric English, and in this podcast, we aim to make cybersecurity understandable for anyone and everyone. That includes you. So today, we're going to talk a little bit about incident response and reporting. To recap some of the previous episodes. By the way, this is episode 6, and today is June 26th of 2025. So previous episodes, we talked about going all the way back to the very first episode. We talked about some cybersecurity basics, CIA, triad, threat landscape, key terms, fun stuff like that. We also talked about common threats and attacks. And then we moved on to best practices like MFA, endpoint protection, patch management, basic stuff like that. Then we talked about some networking concepts, data protection and privacy, security in the workplace, and then a quick introduction to some of the cybersecurity tools that are out there. So today it's all about incident response and incident reporting. And you're probably wondering, what is an incident? Well, an incident in cybersecurity is basically when you have some sort of breach or compromise of your system. What is a compromise? What is a breach? What does that mean? Well, we can start with a breach. A breach would be where somebody gains access to your network or to your systems, and they've done so in such a way that was unauthorized. So that could be a breach. A compromise is when, let's say, someone gets a phishing email. They click on that phishing email, and they give up their username and password, and then the hackers log in as that user with that username and password. So that would be a compromise. And typically what they call that is business email compromise, or BEC, when it comes from like an email, phishing email, and someone's email account gets compromised. It's a BEC, or business email compromise, which is probably the most common types of incidents, if you want to call it that. Now, if you have smaller incidents, like one person gets phished, that's not as bad. But if you have, you know, 5 to 10 people that get phished, if you have more than that, or something worse happens, then of course, that would constitute a major incident. So there are varying degrees of incidents, but not all of them are the same. So those varying degrees of incidents will depend on how you respond. If it's something small, you probably won't get a bunch of people involved. You'll just kind of handle it. You'll reset that person's password, change their password, and go back to that user and say, hey, you know, you were phished. I've changed your password. Let's get everything set back up for you again and get them, you know, up and running again with a new password. And then if you don't have MFA for that person, you would enable multi-factor authentication to help prevent that kind of thing in the future. So those are kind of the basics of an incident. So how do you figure out whether or not you've had an incident? How do you know? How do you know when you've been breached? How do you know when someone's been compromised? Well, that goes back to our previous episode. We were talking about the SIM, or the log aggregation tool, and the log correlation tool, the security information and event management system. That's the SIEM. Some people call it a SIEM, whichever you prefer, but SIEM is the acronym. And using a tool like that will help you determine whether or not you've been breached, whether or not you've been compromised, things like that. But you can also tell, you know, pretty quickly when, you know, internal people are getting a funny email from the CEO, Bill. Bill all of a sudden got phished, gave up his password. Hackers gained access to Bill's account, and now Bill is sending fishy emails to other internal employees. Those are kind of the obvious when you've been compromised kind of thing. But some of the not so obvious is when, you know, someone hacks into a server that you may have that was on the internet hosting a website. They hack into that server and they may sit there and wait. They call that dwell time. So how long after an initial attack or an initial compromise do the hackers sit and wait before they take additional action? So they may hack into one of your servers that are, you know, sitting on the internet. And then from there, they might wait a little bit, or they may immediately try to hack into something else that's internal. And they call that pivoting, typically, or lateral movement, where you hack into one system, and then from there, you're able to hack into something else on the same network, or move laterally on the same network and hack into other systems. So There's a lot of different ways to recognize and find these kinds of attacks. Typically, it's through your SIM. You're going to have your logs from that web server that you had that somebody hacked into. If you have your logs from that server going to your SIM, then you should see where someone, you know, either logged into that server, or hopefully there's some other sort of event that you can see on that server, specifically from like your endpoint security tool, like a CrowdStrike or SentinelOne, assuming that's on that web server. And if it is, those types of tools would pick up, you know, any signs of compromise in most cases. But you also want to have that logging in place. So you're sending those logs from that server. And the logs are basically just keeping track of events that have happened on that system. So someone logged into the system. Someone changed a file. Someone uploaded a file. Someone moved something. Someone, you know, restarted a service. Whatever the event is, there's a log or a record kept of that event. And those records and those logs are what you would send to your SIM. And then the SIM analyzes all those logs. It parses out all of the irrelevant information and just keeps the relevant things that it needs to alert on. So that's typically how you would recognize, you know, whether or not you've been compromised. You need to have those security alerts and those security tools in place to be able to, you know, alert on those things effectively. And if you don't, then you may not know that you've been compromised until it's too late. You know, you look up and all of a sudden your files are being encrypted on your server. At that point, it's too late. So hopefully you catch it before then. So the other part of this is, when you have an incident that happens, what do you do? What steps do you take? How do you fix everything? How do you report everything to upper management, to, you know, the public? You know, whatever it is, right? So typically what you would do is you would have, there's some basic steps in your incident response. So when you have an incident, you usually have an incident response plan, or at least you should. And those incident response plans help you plan for the worst. It helps you plan for an incident. So without those plans, you can still recover and do what you need to do. However, you may kind of fumble through it and not really know, you know, exactly what you should be doing. So what you want to do is you want to have an incident response plan. And as part of that plan, there's usually like four phases of the plan. It's to identify. So identify the breach, or identify the compromise, or identify what's happening. And then you have the containment phase, where you isolate a computer, you take it off the network, you unplug it, you turn it off, whatever it is, however you can contain or isolate a system, or even a user for that matter. If it's a user, you would disable that user account or change the password, or, you know, there's a myriad of things that you could do. So you want to identify, then contain. Once you've contained everything, the next step would be to eradicate. So what does that mean? That means to get rid of, right? So get rid of those hackers, get them out of your network, get them out of your systems. You don't want them there, right? And then the last phase of incident response is typically recover. So how do you recover? What do you need to do? You need to restore a backup of your server and put it back to a previous state. Do you need to, you know, wipe a system? Do you need to, you know, reset some passwords? Do you need to just blow everything up and start all over? So those are the typical steps for an incident response. So identify, contain, eradicate, and then recover. So as part of your incident response plans, and I highly recommend you at least document some of this, document kind of what you would do in to identify, what you would do to contain, what you would do to eradicate and recover. Not only that, but who is responsible is also a big part of that. Do you need to get a third-party vendor to come in and help you? Do you need to get other departments involved and have them help you? If the compromise started in the finance department, do you need to go get somebody from their department and figure out what are the next steps? How do we recover this financial data? What do we do to block this person out of our system? Things like that are what you want to document in your incident response plans. There are plenty of templates out there on the internet. You can go find them very, very easily. But having that plan in place just helps you, you know what to do when it happens. You hope that it never happens, right? But at least when you have a plan, you know what to do when it does happen. So that makes it very, very helpful, much easier too, if even if you've memorized your incident response plan, at least you know what to do. And that's part of the issue with a lot of these companies. They're either too small and they don't have, you know, security staff, or they just don't know what to do when these things happen. And then when you don't know what to do and you don't take action quick enough, the hackers will just make it worse. Typically, they'll start encrypting all your files and stealing your data and then trying to hold you ransom and all kinds of crazy stuff. So having those plans in place, and then also having those systems and controls in place to help you detect, to help you identify, to help you contain, to help you recover, without those security tools in place, doing all these steps is going to be very difficult, because you won't know where the bad guy is, what systems they got into. And even when you find out which ones they got into, how do you contain that system, right? So when you have tools like CrowdStrike or SentinelOne, it has capabilities that it can isolate the system from the network. So even though it's still plugged in and turned on, you can fully isolate that computer so that it cannot communicate with anything else other than to and from CrowdStrike or to and from SentinelOne. So that way you can still manage the device, remote into the device through CrowdStrike or SentinelOne, and, you know, perform any kind of, you know, necessary cleanup that you need to do, whatever it is. But at least you can isolate those systems. That's just one small example. But if you have a slew of systems and you know that they're all hacked and compromised, you need to find a way to isolate those systems right away. Because if you don't, what if that infection spreads? What if that ransomware spreads to your servers, to your other workstations, to other highly critical systems? This is why you have to stop it as soon as you possibly can. Now, some people take it to the next level when it comes to incident response, and I don't really blame them when doing so. But another really good way to, if you're mostly an in-office company, this is a lot easier to achieve. If you have remote employees, it makes it a lot harder, but we'll dive into a little bit of this. So if you have an office and you have a firewall, okay, great. What I would do is I would stage an incident response rule in the firewall. So that rule in the firewall would block all traffic, inbound and outbound, except for traffic to and from CrowdStrike or traffic to and from whoever your MDR or EDR tool is. So if it's SentinelOne, you would have a list of their IP addresses, their host names, all that kind of fun stuff. And you would put that rule in your firewall and leave it disabled until you need it. And then when you need it, flip the switch on that rule. Nothing else can communicate. So that's a very good step to take when you're in the middle of an incident. Turn on that firewall rule, block anything and everything to and from your network except from your EDR tool. So that's just one example of something that you can kind of stage in your firewall and have it ready so that in the event that there is some sort of incident, you can log into the firewall, enable that rule, and boom, nothing gets in or out except to and from your EDR tool. So I highly recommend, you know, doing steps like that. Anything else that you can stage like that and just have it ready. Because trying to make these firewall rules on the fly, especially if you have multiple firewalls, and if you don't have the rule in there at all, you're not going to know if it works or not, right? So put these rules in place, test them, make sure they work, put them on all your firewalls, and then be ready to flip the switch, you know, when something happens. And that way, as soon as you enable that rule, all of those networks are much more secure, right? So the attackers, what they like to do is once they get into a system, they're going to try to maintain some sort of persistence on that system. So they're going to install any kind of backdoor tools, VPNs, remote access, whatever it is. Well, if you cut that off at the firewall, well, then they can't do what they're trying to do. So this is a really good technique to help prevent some of this stuff. So just one way of doing it. There are plenty of other things that you can do, but that's just one, you know, basic example. So again, I mentioned, you know, getting other people, other departments involved. You know, in some cases you have to. Sometimes you got to get the C-level executives involved if it's bad enough, right? So if it's to that level, let's say you're a publicly traded company, you're going to have to report that to the SEC. And that's where it gets really hairy, but that's when the reporting part of this comes into play. What do you report? How do you report? These are all things you need to figure out with your legal team. So before you report anything or say anything in the public, make sure you have some sort of a lawyer who understands all of this and can help you through that. You don't want to say too much, but you don't want to say too little. So, and you still want to comply with SEC regulations if you're publicly traded, or if you have any other kind of compliance that you have to deal with. Like if you're a financial institution, you know, it's kind of a similar thing. You have to report these kinds of incidents and make sure you've got an attorney that looks over that and says, okay, yes, this looks good. You can report that. And, oh, no, you can't say that, you know, say this instead, whatever it is, get all the legal jargon fixed before you send any kind of stuff like that out. But you also need to have a reporting chain or like a call tree, if you want to call it that. But like when you have an incident, you want to know, at what level should I start reaching out to the CEO? You know, at what level do I, you know, not reach out to the CEO? You know, what's that threshold look like? And then making sure you have that line of communication to those C-level executives. If you need to reach out to your CIO or your CTO or your CISO, whatever it is, however your reporting structure is in your company, make sure you have that documented so that you know who to go to, when to go to them, and have some sort of contact information for them. So the other piece, you know, I mentioned legal and compliance quite a bit. Those are massive parts to any kind of incident because legal is, like I said, you don't want to say the wrong thing in the public, and you don't want to say too much, you don't want to say too little. There's a very fine line that you have to walk, so you want to make sure that you have an attorney that has your back in case some sort of a lawsuit or litigation comes out due to that incident or data breach. So make sure you've got legal counsel involved, and even have a retainer with a legal firm, if you can afford it, have that retainer. So that way, if something happens, you got someone you can call right away and say, hey, this happened. What do we do? Another big piece of that is your cyber insurance. So a lot of companies don't even have cyber insurance, and it's expensive. It is. But if you do have cyber insurance, it can help cover the cost of the whole, you know, incident response process. So it'll help cover the cost of containments, of eradication, of recovery, all that kind of stuff, right? So you want to, if you can afford it, you want to try to get some sort of cyber insurance that covers, you know, a certain percentage, whatever that is, whatever you can afford. But also too, as part of that cyber insurance, they will have contacts for you too. They'll say, hey, you know, you should reach out to this company to help you recover, or hey, reach out to these attorneys. These are the attorneys that we work with. So there may be stipulations too in those cyber insurance policies that says you have to work with XYZ attorney and these companies and whatever it is, however they have it laid out. But you want to make sure that you're, of course, compliant with all of that. If you have any kind of regulations that you have to follow, if you're a government entity, you know, there's all kinds of regulations out there. The financial industry is another big one too, of course. So make sure that you're remaining compliant with legal's help, with your cyber insurance help. You're saying just enough. If you need to, you know, pay something out to customers, you got all that stuff all figured out as part of that incident response process. So incident response is a massive, massive topic, and we will dig a little bit deeper into these types of topics as the podcast moves forward. But for now, I'm going to stop there on the incident response piece. All right, so let's do a quick recap once again of everything we've talked about for the first six episodes here. Again, we did an intro to cybersecurity. What is cybersecurity? The CIA triad, the threat landscape, key terms that you'll hear in the industry. We talked about all that. We also talked about common threats and attacks. So malware, viruses, Trojans, ransomware, social engineering, phishing, network attacks, insider threats, that kind of fun stuff. We talked about best practices like multi-factor authentication, good passwords, safe browsing, patch management, endpoint protection. Then we talked about your network security concepts. We talked about DNS and ports and protocols and intrusion detection, intrusion prevention, zero trust, VPNs, all that kind of stuff. And then we moved into data protection and privacy, so encrypting your data at rest and in transit, backups, secure file sharing, disposal of files, and then privacy regulations. And then we looked at security in the workplace, like acceptable use policies and other policies. Bring your own device, corporate devices, physical security, and security awareness training. And then we talked about some of the common cybersecurity tools like your antivirus, your firewalls, your SIEMs, password managers. We talked about red team and blue team, fun stuff like that. And then this episode's been mostly about incident response and reporting. So the goal here moving forward is to do more of a deep dive on some of these topics and really start getting into the weeds on how these things work, how to set things up, how to configure things securely, best practices, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. We're going to look at the NIST framework, all kinds of cool things coming up in the next few episodes. So stay tuned for those. For right now, though, we're going to end this one here, but we will be back next week and we're going to dive into the NIST framework. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.